Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.
In 2015, an elite DFS Army commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Welcome to the Tacos Fast 40 podcast, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. It's that time of year again, about time to kick off the NASCAR season with the biggest event in NASCAR, the Daytona 500. Before I get into the field, the track, what you need to do to play Fantasy NASCAR, I gotta let you know that if you like Fantasy NASCAR at all, you've gotta join DFSArmy.com. The Truck Series just started last night. DraftKings announced a few days ago that they would be covering that. We already have that in our optimizer. Had a pretty interesting start to the season with only the 9 trucks surviving that race and it just being a huge caution fest. It was quite fun to watch. A truck should be really fun to cover with Daily Fantasy in the mix. And of course, we've got our Xfinity coverage as well. And your subscription to DFS Army not only covers NASCAR, it covers all of our daily fantasy sports. We've got baseball right around the corner. NBA is coming out of the All-Star break. So a lot of good value to be had with the DFS Army package. You can check us out with the link in the description. And use promo code TACO on sign up for that lifetime 20% off discount. If you want access to the research station that I'll be referencing throughout this podcast to help you go through all of the relevant numbers that you will need to break down the NASCAR slates thoroughly, a lot of cool features up there already and a bunch more to come throughout the season. And of course, there's the Domination Station lineup optimizer. Even with the short turnaround, we get those filled and ready to go right before right after qualifying. And we're just ready to have another exciting season of Fantasy NASCAR. Last season was fantastic for the DFS Army. We hopped on Xfinity early. We crushed it early and often. We won so many tournaments. You always saw those DFS Army helmets all over the top of all the major GPPs. Really attacked Xfinity last year. Looking to do the same with the trucks. The trucks are quite wild, I must admit. I was never that big of a truck fan before, but I think last night's race may have made me a fan. That was true brutal carnage. And we might not see as much of that here today, or at the Daytona 500, but it should be fun to, or for the future, moving forward. So those races are usually on Friday. Not as many races as a NASCAR season. Only about 22, 23 races in a season in trucks. They don't repeat tracks. They do go to some interesting tracks like Eldora and Gateway. You know, in some places that NASCAR doesn't go to. You know, like Eldora is their dirt track, which is a pretty fun week. So, yesterday pretty much, if you played anyone in the back that survived, or really just anyone that survived, you were looking at a good time there. We had the chalk of the field and Sauter ended up crashing along with pretty much everyone else. Most of the guys ended up crashing there, and it was a really wild, a crazy race. Ended up top 20 in that big 8, but didn't get to pull down anything too huge. But looking to do that both today in the Xfinity race and, of course, tomorrow in the Daytona 500, which is what we're here to talk about. So just a quick breakdown of what we're looking for this week, what a restrictor plate race is, and basically how to attack Daily Fantasy NASCAR if you're new. A lot of this will be basic information if you've already played before, but just off the bat, the best way to describe it is you've got three different ways that your drivers can score. The first way is through finishing position. So if you win, you get 46 points, which is 43. When they made these rules, there are 43 drivers in each field, but now there are 40, sometimes 38, sometimes 37, but here we'll have 40. That's why it's called Tacos Fast 40. And if you win, you get a 3-point bonus. So if you win, you get 46 points. If you come in second, you get 42 points, and then third is 41 points, so on and so forth. So that's the one way on DraftKings to score. It's pretty similar on FanDuel when it comes to the finishing position. We'll talk about the difference with FanDuel here. We'll just go through DraftKings real quick. So with DraftKings, you've also got place differential. If you start third and you finish first, you get 2 points of place differential. If you start first and you finish 40th, that's negative 39. So you always got to watch out for that. And, you know, if you played anyone in the trucks last night, you would know that even if someone's looking really good, leading a lot of laps at Daytona at one of these races, the crashes can come at any time and blow you up and send you all the way back to being a horrible, horrible play, even if you were a really great play for 99% of the race. We're going to go through the crashes over the last few years to try to just give you an idea of how they work here, sort of. But anyway, moving along with the scoring here, the last way that you can gain points on DraftKings is through what we call dominator points, or fast laps in combination with lead laps. So lead laps will give you 0.25 fantasy points for each lead lap, and fast laps will give you a half a fantasy point. So the fast laps are more important, but at a restrictor plate race like Daytona, the fast laps are very unpredictable, and they usually go to the guys sort of at the back of the biggest pack. And that's completely unlike most other races. You know, usually the fast laps go to whoever's out there in the lead and has the clean air, but that is absolutely not the case here at Daytona. Daytona is a restrictor plate race, and it'll actually be their last restrictor plate race with the new rules package coming into play. So we're still looking at the data from previous years, because it's still relevant to this race. But moving forward with the new rules package, the horsepower is reduced enough to the point where we won't need a restrictor plate. We'll be able to rely on that new tapered spacer added to the engine to reduce the horsepower there. So this will be one of the last normal weeks, quote-unquote normal, because usually these restrictor plate races are very, very, very different than what we're used to. But, you know, we're going into completely uncharted territory with the new rules package here. Should change a lot of how things work. It's going to be in effect in all of the races that are over 1 mile long for the rest of this year, so we'll get into that next week when you have to actually deal with that. For now, let's just keep rolling with the scoring. I need to explain FanDuel scoring as well for those who play FanDuel. FanDuel is a lot more dependent on finishing position. The place differential points are halved. You only get half a point for every place that you move up. And there are no fast laps. You can throw fast laps out the window. They replace those with completed laps. And that really puts a stress on just surviving the race and getting all of your 200 laps. They'll be running 200 laps here at Daytona. And then you also get 0.1 points for each lead lap. So those are the only real dominator points you get, are lead laps. So that kind of changes things up as well over there. And if you look in the historical performances tab on the research station, really nice little tool to check out there. If you sort by DraftKings scoring, you'll see that 10 out of the top 11 scores on DraftKings had guys starting 28th or further back, with the most ever put up, at least since 2013, which is what we try to use because this was the last model of Carr goes back to 2013. Denny Hamlin started 11th, led 95 laps, and then finished first, won the race, got 82.2 DraftKings points, and that was only 0.25 fantasy points more than Ryan Blaney, who started in 36th, and then ended up finishing second. Of these guys, you know, the highest scorers in past years, the only guys to go past 70 fantasy points, 9 of them started 30th or worst, 32nd or worse, to be specific, and 3 of them started 40th or worse. Back in 2015, Hamlin started 42nd, finished 4th for 79 points. Casey Mears started 41st and finished 6th for 77 points. So on DraftKings, it's always been really important to focus on the tail end of the field, as where if you sort it by FanDuel points, it tells a different story. You see almost all of the guys in the top 10 all started in the top 10, with the exception of Austin Dillon, who started 14th and won it last year. And yeah, FanDuel is very, very helpful for, you know, if you're playing both sites, you get the exposure to the guys starting in the front on FanDuel, and then get the guys starting in the back for DraftKings. I mean, you see Ryan Blaney, who had the second most DraftKings points. He rates out at like 12th on FanDuel and got 60 points. You know, the same amount of points that Jimmy Johnson got starting second and finishing 5th with 39 lead laps. And you can tell just by going race by race and seeing who made the DraftKings optimal lineup compared to who made the FanDuel optimal lineups, that can give you a real sense of the difference between the sports. And the historical summary tab also does a really good job of showing how drivers fare, not only based on their starting positions, but by their season average driver rating, generally how good of a driver they are. And if you go and look to, if you look at the DraftKings section of it, you'll see guys starting first through fifth average 13.7 fantasy points. Guys starting in the second like chunk of five there, sixth through 10th, average 17. 11th through 15th, average 19. 16th through 20th, average 15 fantasy points. The top 20, the front half of the field, pretty much always scores less than the back half of the field. 21st through 25th scores 25 on average. And then 26th, all the way going back to 40th starting position, all these groups average over 35 fantasy points per driver. If you're starting in the back 15, you have over a 30% chance of hitting 50 fantasy points, as where if you're starting in the top 10, you only have a 10% chance of hitting 50 fantasy points. So, I mean, the strategy is pretty clear, although we have definitely seen in years past, especially last year, guys starting out in the front that stick around end up being good plays. You know, it doesn't always necessarily fall by the way of carnage. I mean, some years we do have the big one, but you know, I've mapped out some of the crashes, and in some years, like 2016, we had no crashes bigger than 3 cars here. In 2015, no crashes bigger than 7 cars. It's still a pretty big crash, but it doesn't always have to be a giant big one. We just saw it last Talladega, which was the last plate race that we had. There were like no crashes at all. Until the very end, we had some minor crashes, and you know, it was single file racing. It was very, very boring. That's kind of what we saw in the duels, the qualifying duels, but those are always played really safe. You will have crashes pretty much no matter what. Let me go through the crashes. I have them mapped out here year by year. Just gonna tell you real quick. So I kind of graphed them out based on what lap the cautions happened, and then from there. I put in like 5 lap segments divided by stage, and just put the numbers of the cars that crashed in all these different stages. The first thing that you can notice is since 2013, there have only been 3 stages in, or 3 crashes in what's now known as stage 2. Even though they didn't have the stages back 2016 and past, still the middle of the race tends to be quite boring and can get kind of single file-y. We've had a stage 1 crash in every single race, and usually it's a one-person crash to start. So in 2018, 2017, 2015, and 2014, things started off with a one-person minor incident before lap 30. The latest that a crash has come was in 2013, where on lap 35 they had a nine-car accident and then didn't have another crash for over 100 laps. So stage one, you'll have some smaller kind of sporadic sort of crashes. You know, last year we did have a nine-car crash on lap 60. In 2013, there was a nine-car crash on lap 35, like I just mentioned. But you won't get the bigger ones until later, usually. I mean, it can always happen, but usually they come later. Last year, at the very end of the race, we had a 12-person crash. 2017, lap 130, we had a 17-car crash. Then they line up on the restart. Then 5 people crash, and they restart again. And then 11 people crash. So, you know, if they get past the restart and get going for a while, you can have these long 100-lap stretches where nothing happens. And it's a little boring. But once they get bunched up for a restart again, that's when the carnage usually happens. That's why we see repeat wrecks happen here quite often. You know, in 2017, we didn't see a crash after that initial flurry early in stage three. From lap 150 forward, there were no crashes to end the entire race. In 2016, you know, there was a three-car crash lap 185, but after that, we were clean to green, as were in 2015 and 2014. And last year, we were crashing a couple times, restarting and crashing again at the very end of stage three, which is usually the norm. Just a little bit more of the norm at Talladega than Daytona. But still, you can see that the crashes are going to be spread out here. Again, the chances are that a big one will happen, but there could be a race like 2016 where there are just a bunch of minor little kerfuffles and no big one. It's likely to happen. Not likely to happen, but it is possible. So, the strategy for this week, you know, as usual, pretty much to target the guys starting in the back. But you'll notice each and every restrictor plate race, the meta in the DFS game keeps getting sharper and sharper, and people keep going to the back and to the back. And the last Daytona 500, actually, if you completely avoided the guys in the top 15, like usually a pretty good strategy for a plate race, you actually kind of got whooped. The top two scorers were from the top 15, which we had pretty much never seen before. Ryan Blaney started third, led 118 laps, and ended up finishing seventh, but the lead laps were enough to put him not only up top of DraftKings, but FanDuel as well. And then you had Austin Dillon starting 14th, who ended up winning. It was supposed to be Eric Almirola, you know, starting way back in, like, what was it, 37th? He was going to win the dang thing. That probably would have been the one of the better scores of all time, but he did end up getting into trouble right there in the back stretch of the last lap, and fell back to 13th, 11th. Yeah, he fell back to 11th, but still, and the difference in the optimal lineups, Hamlin and Bubba Wallace, who started second and seventh and finished third and second, they weren't even near the optimal lineup in DraftKings as where they were on FanDuel. They were the third and fourth highest scoring guys, and you've got guys like Paul Menard or David Gilliland is a great example. Started 39th, ended up 14th. On DraftKings, he was the fifth highest scorer, is where on FanDuel, he was like the 11th or 12th highest scorer. Still a good value since he was like bare minimum price, but, you know, just really showing the difference between FanDuel and DraftKings, how it works. Again, remember, this is not like a normal race. Normal races will be a lot different than this. With the restrictor played in, the horsepower to the engines reduced, and the teams can pack up and, you know, get in a really tight bunch. And that's why the big crashes usually can happen on these restarts where they're all bunched up and close to each other, running two or three wide. Like I had said, it can fall apart, and it can become single file if everyone survives a restart, but that's definitely not a guarantee. A lot of newer drivers in this thing, so we're going to have to see. So let's get through this field here before Xfinity qualifying starts soon as I'm recording. So got to hurry up and get through. It's Taco's Fast 40 after all. So I'm going to go from the first starting position to the last instead of going by salary, because salary won't matter too much this week. There is one expensive guy that I'm sure everybody's going to try and get, so that might keep you from leaving too many thousands on the table, but we'll get to them. Starting off with William Byron and Alex Bowman on the front row. Byron won the pole, and of course Bowman won the second position in qualifying, and as Daytona always is, you qualify and only the top two get to even have their qualification really matter. The rest is qualification for the duels. And they ran the 60-lap duels. And the first one was pretty safe until towards the end. There's, you know, a little bit of stuff going on. The second one was really, really safe, kind of usually how it goes there. Did have a few things weird go down. Keselowski is the big one. He ended up getting penalized a couple times and got, you know, pretty much finished last and gets to start way down in 35th, so he's going to be the chalk of this slate for sure. We'll talk about him towards the end there as we get down to him. But yeah, so Byron and Bowman starting first and second. Usually you want to avoid, you know, the top two starting spots. If you look at the pole sitters, they average 13 fantasy points, average finish of 20th. The average 24 lead laps, but even with the 24 lead laps, they still average the 13 fantasy points. And if you look at all the Daytona races and look at all the guys that have started first, Dale Earnhardt Jr. in 2015, he led 96 laps and won. That's the only time that a first-place starter has been valuable. He was in the optimal on both lineups, but he's the only person starting on the front row to be in the optimal lineup in DraftKings. You know, you had Dale again starting third in 2015. Who also led some laps, and then of course Blaney when he led 118 last year. Those are the only real times that guys starting up in the front have put up tons of points like that. You know, you did have Keselowski in 2016, who won from fifth with 115 lead laps. You needed him, but that was in the Coke Zero 400. Less laps in that one, but it's still pretty comparable to the 500, although that one's raced at night. 500's raced you know, first thing in the season, and during the daytime here in February. So you know, the pole sitters here you do want to avoid. They are in fast cars, though, I will say that. Last year Bowman did sort of the same thing, won the pole, and in the class he just fell back pretty safely. Byron actually was very aggressive, or not in the class, sorry, the duels. Byron is very aggressive in the duels. You would expect him to fall back more than he did. He ended up leading a decent amount of laps to start with, and then you could tell he just had a really fast car. He was in qualifying trim, and he was supposed to sort of fall back, and he ended up, both of them ended up, I think, taking practice pits towards the end that completely ruined their finish and all that. So they ended up being just fine fades. You know, we've seen Chase Elliott have success here before. He's won two of the duels and started on the pole, you know, a few years ago. We've seen Jimmy Johnson dominate this thing over and over again historically. So Hendrick's always had their thumb on this race, the Hendrick Chevys being William Byron, Alex Bowman, Chase Elliott, and Jimmy Johnson. And, you know, they're very fast. You saw in qualifying. Of course, they were on qualifying trim, but they got, you know, Chase up there to third and Jimmy Johnson up to fourth. So it was like just all Hendricks up front. And Jimmy Johnson also won the Clash as well. But, you know, the different car manufacturers, it's going to be a really interesting story, because you saw, you've seen so far in the duels and the Clash that people are really, really, really wanting to line up and do pit stops all as a group by manufacturers, especially Toyota. You're seeing this. So manufacturer stacks are really in play this week, I think. Of course, it's going to be easier to do ones like, you know, like Toyota, where a bunch of guys are starting in the back, but you're playing different options, and I think that it's going to be really beneficial to have some lineups where you stack like Stuart Haas or Penske or something like that. We saw just last year, I think it was Logano, and really Penske pretty much dominates this thing every year, but we saw Logano and Keselowski finish 1-2 before, and you know, at Talladega, all you needed to do is play Stuart Haas Racing. They just sat there 1-2-3-4 for pretty much all of the race. You could definitely see something like that come into play, especially if there are some cautions and people do a fuel strategy. You really see the JGR Toyotas trying to do that a lot. And of course, it's something Logano and Keselowski have also been really good at doing, but usually they don't need to resort to strategy here where they just straight up dominate usually. The Fords are in a new Mustang, but so far it seems all right. You know, you saw Bowyer really dominate one of the duels, and Harvick dominated the other duels. And they were kind of fast in practice. Practice, of course, is going to really be thrown out the window, sort of. I know I've got the lap-by-lap, the lap-by-lap tools that I've got just collecting everyone's lap times for the practices. You can see just by, you know, sorting by the top and stuff that usually the guys that show up to the front of practice are the guys that do like drafting runs. You saw like one practice, like I think it was practice two, where all the it was like a bunch of scrubs up there on top of the speed charts until the very end, when JGR all decided to run as a pack and you know, just rack up all the fastest laps there, just because a lot of other people are doing single car runs and stuff. And we've still got a practice to go tomorrow. I don't think a lot of people are going to take all that seriously. But yeah, these Hendrick cars, they really don't like to, they don't like to take practices together and do the drafting and stuff in practice. They're kind of playing it safe, especially since they got some pole sitting cars. You saw last practice, Byron and Bowman were 27th and 24th in speeds. It doesn't matter. Throw that out. It really doesn't matter much at all. It's practice, you know, just guys that are drafting are going to be faster. Guys that weren't are going to be slower. Maybe use that to your advantage. Hopefully it gets some ownership off people. Of course, you're not really going to want to play Byron and Bowman, but I will say that you might need some exposure to them. Byron has some potential. I could see his car is indeed pretty fast, and he could lead, you know, he could possibly lead some laps. I'm talking like if you're multi-entering, like a 5% exposure to these guys, they're not really going to be owned, especially Bowman. He's going to be really a low owned. So I could see maybe playing him in a single entry or something and hoping he dominates somehow. That's kind of unlikely. And yeah, Byron, you know, 32nd and 23rd here at Daytona last year, the last 2 years. You know, a lot of that was just unfortunate. He had shown some chops in the 500 until I think he got crashed there towards the end. But yeah, not really on these guys. Going down to Harvick and Logano, they're probably going to be good FanDuel plays where they'll probably get chalky. But on DraftKings, you're definitely going to want to hope that people play the defending champ Logano and Harvick, who obviously dominated last year. And this is just where you take the the facts, which is, you know, the top five just do not score like that. Their average fantasy points are garbage usually. And I can see Logano, who has done really, really well here historically, who won the duel with a great move. You know, I could see Logano doing something here. Harvick hasn't really dominated here too much in the past. I mean, he has, but more at Talladega. Like, he was the one in front at Talladega, but a lot of this is just situational, who just so happens to find themselves up there. I mean, you could see Bowman and Byron getting passed kind of right away, and then Harvick's out there dominating some. So I'll definitely have some exposure to Harvick, but it's not going to be very much. I want to be underweight on the field with most of these guys up front. It's just kind of how it is. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., starting fifth, $9,800. Well, there's no point in bringing up their salary, really. It's not going to matter. But I expect him to be a bit under-owned on both sites. He's just going to fall by the wayside. People are going to want to play Kyle Busch or a Keselowski right in that range, since they're starting back in the 30s. Stenhouse we saw in the clash, and really just in general on FanDuel, he gets very, very, very low ownership, and I love him on FanDuel this week. And he's starting fifth, but as I've shown, guys starting in the top 10 can score pretty decently on FanDuel, and he's won before. He won the Coke Zero 400 in 2017. Usually does better at that race than the 500, but still, Stenhouse, you know, he's won at Talladega too. Very good at plate racing. And, you know, we've even seen his teammate Newman in the six taking over for Bame there. He's looked pretty darn fast in that car as well this week. And that's his teammate there. You know, most of the attention's paid on Stenhouse. So, you know, fifth in qualifying. I know it's really something you don't want to play and over on DraftKings. But on FanDuel, he makes for a pretty solid play. Boyer, he's the guy that screwed me over in the second duel. He was my lowest exposure of anybody, and of course he ended up leading all of those laps, so you know, shame on me. Any of the Fords could really pop off, and Boyer's in a spot to where you want to get a little ownership to him, just like Stenhouse, because not only can he dominate, he can also just hang in the top 10 a pretty decent amount, you know. He's done that historically here. Usually at the 400, he does a lot better than the 500, but he's just had a lot of wrecks at the 500 recently, wrecks in 2017, 2016, 2014. So, you know, the one time he didn't wreck in 2015, finished 7th, 2013, finished 11th. He knows how to hang, and he's in the fastest car he's ever been in his career, so not too worried about him. You've got Almirola, or you've got Paul Menard starting 7th, who's been looking really fast. He was the fastest in both average lap times and fastest lap overall in practice, second in the 10 lap speeds that last practice. I mean, you know, be that as it may, he did take the pole for the clash, and he actually dominated that a pretty decent amount. Had a really good race until Jimmy Johnson ended up taking him out at the end there and causing that big crash. But you know, the clash, an exhibition race, different car, but even still, you know, he's been looking pretty awesome in the duels. He was moving up early. He looked even better than like Logano did, as weird as it sounds to say, for a good portion of that race. So Menard starting 7th, he might want some exposure to him. Historically, he's done well here. He's finished better than 7th in 3 of his last 4 races at Daytona. So not someone I'm crossing off completely. I am getting just small shares of these guys up front. It's not like a year where I just completely, you know, ignore the top guys. But if you're not playing many lineups, I would still recommend kind of ignoring a lot of these top guys and just hoping carnage hits. But, you know, you're going to want at least, especially on FanDuel, have a little exposure to guys like Logano, Harvick, Boyer, Menard, especially guys like Harvick and Logano, just because they can and have dominated this race in the past. So Eric Almirola starting in 8th. I really liked him coming in. Wish he didn't qualify so high. Should have won this race last year. He did win this race in the Coke Zero 400 back in 2014. In 2017, he finished 5th in the 500. So really, really good at plate races. We've also seen him dominate in Talladega and Xfinity. He's had some really good runs there. So I think he's going to go really under-owned. Like him on FanDuel a lot, of course. That's where I like to get the exposure to him. But on DraftKings even, he can make for a pretty decent play. He can definitely hang. We saw in the duels, he was up there in the top 3, top 4, pretty much the entire duel. Looked like he had a pretty solid car. Just another great Stuart Haas Ford. So I don't mind getting some Almirola. I just wish he would have started a little bit further back. Matt DiBenedetto starting 9th. He's in a new car this year, Casey Kane's old 95 that used to be the Michael McDowell K-Love car, but not so much anymore. Much better car for him. Big move up from his 32 last year. You know, he's moving up in the world, and he's always been good at Daytona. He's finished top 13 in 3 of the last 4 years here. Usually when he's not wrecking, he's surprisingly good at just hanging around. And even has shown some speed in practice. In the last practice, he was, in the third practice, that is, he was second in 10-lap averages, which is kind of weird. But, you know, starting ninth still, no one's going to own him, and I don't think anyone should really play him. He's probably a good, safe avoid across the board because there's not really much downside to fading him, honestly. What's he going to do, like finish third or fourth somehow? And, you know, and it's got to be a situation like Trucks where the whole dang field crashes and he ends up as a survivor. And even then, you're still going to want to take the guys that went up like 20 spots or something. He can only go up like a few spots. And I really don't see that from him. He's going to go backwards. Just not the best play you can make. Denny Hamlin, he's starting in 10th. I think he goes overlooked on both sides. We saw in the duels, he was one of the only guys pushing the issue. Really got up there, was in 2nd behind Bowyer for a good while. And then at the end there, Logano ended up making this really awesome move around Hamlin. But even still, you know, I like the gusto that Hamlin was showing a little bit. He skipped the last practice, but I don't really care too much. Love him in the JGR stacks, of course. Mix him with Kyle Busch, you're going to have a ton of anyway. And even next guy I'll talk about here, Martin Truex Jr., he's starting 11th. I think he's going to go super overlooked, very low ownership on both sides. Just because the way things shook out, Hamlin has always been a lot better at Daytona, at restrictor plates, especially in 2016 where he beat him by like a millisecond to win the 500. So, you know, I think Hamlin's going to retain more ownership, and actually being higher in salary might help him gain a little ownership as well, as odd as that sounds, because people really feel the need to roster or to fill out their roster and their salary cap still. So, see Trucks getting a little underowned. Maybe on FanDuel he gets kind of popular. He's very cheap over there on FanDuel, cheaper than Alex Bowman and Ricky Stenhouse. I mean, when do you see that? But yeah, Trucks, if you want a nice contrarian option, he's your play. But if you're just looking optimal, he's not really where you want to go. He's so much better on the 1.5 miles. He's never really shown too many chops outside of a couple decent finishes at these plate races. Tends to crash a lot. Kurt Busch starting 12th. He's always been really good. He won the 2017 Daytona 500. And it was a long time coming because this is a track he's been very good at, but the win eluded him for a while. He's in Jamie McMurray's car from last year, the 1. And I've had some concerns about Chip Ganassi Racing overall. You know, Larson looks really bad. Jamie McMurray is in the 40 car for CGR, and he's pretty much on his way out after this race because he's retiring. Kurt Busch, you know, had slow practice times and all that. But, you know, we saw in the clash, we saw in the duel, Kurt Busch still just really, really savvy and knows what to do in the draft. So I'm not really worried about that whatsoever. Starting 12th is a little high, but I still like it for FanDuel. Even on DraftKings, I'll have a little exposure there. I think he can move into the top 10 and do something. He's just really good, savvy vet. You've got Bubba Wallace starting 13th. He ended up being in optimals starting 7th last year, so I don't really want to count him out yet. He's never crashed at a plate race yet, which is pretty interesting. 15th. In the Coke Zero 400, filling in for Almirola in the car that he is driving now. And, you know, runner-up in the 2018 Daytona 500. Was always really good in Xfinity, too, at the plate races. Just has a knack for these. You know, he hates Pocono, but boy, does he love Daytona. Top 15 in all three of his races here. And, like I said, no finish worse than... he's finished in the top 20 in every single race that he's raced in, as far as plate races go, in the NASCAR Cup Series. So starting 13th, it would be a fade if it wasn't for his real acumen here. Again, more of a FanDuel play, but you're gonna hear me say that a lot about these top guys. So Ryan Blaney starting 14th, he was a guy that I saw a lot of the higher dollar entry guys, the guys in the $33, were rostering Blaney quite a lot compared to the other smaller contests in the duels. And this is the guy that's dominated here in the past. He's he almost won in 2017. Was doing well last year, again, until he crashed and finished like last. Got Talladega too. I mean, He's in Penske, the Penske car now, instead of being in Menard's car, the 21, the Wood Brothers machine that was just an affiliate with Penske. He's full on Penske now, riding the 12. He's looked really good. Just going to be a play that I'm all about this week. It's basically like getting Logano or Keselowski on the cheap. Of course, starting in a completely different spot than those guys, but he almost brings as much to the table as those two now. Do now, maybe not quite as much. You know, they're the two odds on favorite for a reason. But Blaney is getting right there. He's really improving. I expect a solid season out of him this year, and I don't expect him to be sneaky in the ownership realm though. I think a lot of people are gonna like Blaney. He's a real character. Chris Buescher, $6,300, starting 15th. He's also going to. Or he's someone that's going to be just really low-owned. Love him on FanDuel. Love that play over there on FanDuel. Really solid history here. He started his first three races, crashed all of them. But then since then, 10th in the Coke Zero 400 in 2017, 5th here last year, and then also 5th in the Coke Zero 400 last year. Just a matter of survival, really, but... Buescher is a really good driver. He won the Xfinity Championship. Plate races kind of, you know, they buff user skill a little bit and take away some of the advantage of just being on a better team with better aero. And that's kind of a good sign for guys like Buescher, guys like McDowell. You know, these like middle teams sort of, they get a real bump up, you know, like we saw with like Allmendinger and stuff like that. So. Chris Buescher, going to be low-owned on DraftKings and FanDuel. Love him on FanDuel, and I will have some of him on DraftKings just in case, you know, he survives. He's going to be running up in the front part of the field, and he's honestly looked really good at restrictor plate races. I see his odds on – it's a European site, so you might not be able to bet it, but I see his top three odds as 30-1 right now, which is incredible. I would definitely – I definitely think he does that more than every 30 times. So check your books for something like that. You know, usually I don't like straight up NASCAR betting nearly as much as I do DFS, but that line looked really interesting how low that was. So moving along, Jamie McMurray, starting in 16th. I kind of mentioned him a little bit earlier. He's, you know, my concern coming in was that he wasn't going to have any friends to draft with because, he's like crashed the whole field before, and he's always been a very aggressive driver at these plate races, and he's on his way out. He literally has nothing to lose. But he looked fine enough in stuff like the Clash and the duels. Not too concerned about him. Was slow in practice until that last practice where he was the fastest in the 10 lap speeds and had posted the second fastest lap overall. So you know, at least his car isn't looking complete junk like some other guys. You know, not a play that's going to break too much ownership, especially over on DraftKings, where I think he's just going to kind of fall by the wayside with him starting in the top 20 and everyone kind of knows to target the guys in the back. So if you know, looking for a good contrarian play, this whole range here, 15th through 17th, I know historically it's never scored well. But Jamie McMurray, you know, Chris Buescher, Jimmy Johnson, he's going to be low-owned, especially with just how he's been crashing people throughout the weekend. Very dangerous play, but he's going to be really low-owned. And it's Jimmy Johnson who, you know, at any time could be running up in the top three or four in his Hendrick Chevy, and it wouldn't be too much of a surprise there. So, you know, starting 17th, don't mind the Jimmy play much at all. He's got his teammate next to him, Chase Elliott, starting 18th. He's, I think guys like Keselowski and Kyle Busch will take a little bit of his ownership from him because, you know, people can definitely afford him. So why not? And he's had really, really bad luck at Daytona. Really restrictor plates in general. He's had some bad luck, but he's had four crashes in six tries here at Daytona. And, you know, we saw him win. Not only the duel last year, but the year before that, he won the duel there as well. And we saw him win that pole for that first Daytona 500 back in 2016. And he crashed like right away, you know, maybe his nerves or something, but he crashed pretty darn quick in that. He's a much better driver now. He's definitely got the win humps over him. Got a couple wins last year. and you know, definitely going to be a part of those Hendrick stacks for sure. You're going to have to, he's basically farther back than any of his teammates there. He's my favorite driver. Of course I'm going to have some, but I do actually like him this week, and maybe this will be a week I finally go over the field to him. It never happens, but I try to make it happen. I try. He's very popular. He's the he usually gets more ownership than he's worth. He's like a fan favorite. One fan favorite driver last year, and pretty much the first year who is eligible since Dale Earnhardt Jr. was out of the fray. So yeah, that's why I never really end up on too much Elliott, but I do like him. Him and Blaney, I think, are going to be really, really big studs here in the future. They're going to be taking steps forward, and if it wasn't for the fact he's Chase, I would love to play him for ownership, but I just know that he's Chase, and he's not even starting that bad, you know, starting 18th, so he'll garner over 20%, probably on both sides, so it's a little bit of a shame there. Ryan Newman in his new car, starting 19th in Trevor Bayne's number 6. Bayne always did pretty well in this. He won back when he was with the Wood Brothers here at Daytona. And, his teammate Stenhouse, obviously very, very good at Daytona. Newman has looked really fast. He's been up there in pretty much all the practices with really fast times. Three top 10s in a row at Daytona coming in. Generally does finish in the top 10. Like, his average running position at restrictor is like 22, 23. His average finish is like 12th. He's just really good at not crashing. That's like his main skill. So, in 12 restrictor plate races since 2013, he's only crashed in one of them. That's pretty darn safe, I'd say. He's only crashed in 4 of his 24 restrictor plate races, going back even farther. Newman just generally good at keeping his nose out of trouble, but again, it can strike on anyone at any time, no matter how safe you drive. Even still, Newman, he does look like a solid play. Starting 19th, it's the top half of the field. Ownership won't be too crazy with him starting 19th and not 20th. I think that really does help kind of skew ownership a little bit, so like attacking those guys in like the 9th and 19th position, 29th, just because of things like that, same reason you see things 1999 at the store, just kind of, tricks people a little bit into maybe thinking they're worse off than they would be. So Ryan Preece starting 21st, and AJ Allmendinger's car taking over for that this year. Preece was in Kyle Busch's Xfinity car last year, every now and again, and did pretty decently in it. Never really ended up having the breakouts I expected him to, but still put up some pretty good performances. I think his ownership's going to be low. He'll be pretty sneaky on both sites, especially over on FanDuel, where he'll be like not owned at all. And he's actually priced up compared to the other guys like Hemric and Reddick over there on FanDuel. So you want to get exposure to him over there, but even on DraftKings, starting in the back half of the field technically. It's his first race, and what we see with first-time drivers in the Cup Series is they love to get penalties. Happens so much. We even saw it in, I think it was the duels, where we saw some of these guys. A lot of the rookies, aren't used to the timing lines in Cup Series. And we saw it with, you see it with pretty much every rookie that comes up and starts. They're going to have some, just some growing pains, getting used to the series and all that. So you'll just see a little bit more variance with those kind of guys, but you'll also see lower ownership, especially at first. Preece, probably obvious to anyone who played Xfinity last year, because he was always kind of a big-time play, being in Kyle Busch's car and all, but 6,500 on DraftKings. What is he on FanDuel, like 5,000-something? No, he's 5,000 even, actually pretty cheap. It's Matt Tift actually got priced up over there, kind of weird. Tift did not get priced up much at all over on DraftKings, but Preece, just like him for the low ownership sort of play. Maybe he could survive, 75-1, better than some of the other guys. And driving that Allmendinger car, which at least we know it isn't a scrub car, just kind of mid tier, around like RCR sort of range here. So going to Ty Dillon, Germain Racing, starting in 22nd. He was sixth at the... he crashed the Daytona 500 last year, but then the summer ended up with a sixth-place finish, just hanging on real tight. And that's something that Ty Dillon can do. He's very good at avoiding crashes. Probably one of the better mid-tier, lower-tier drivers at avoiding them crashes. I know a couple of years ago he had about as many lead lap finishes as the elite studs. A good play over on FanDuel. Definitely, I like guys like Ty Dillon over on FanDuel. The ones that are just good at keeping their car together and just not crashing and just chilling around the lead lap or so. That's what you could expect of Ty Dillon. And he's actually gotten some lead laps, he has actually gotten lead laps at restrictor plate races, but just through things like pitting and stuff. But he's kind of in the position where you get some fast laps. See, in this mid-pack sort of, the guys who are going to hang around sort of the back of the mid-pack, they're going to be the ones collecting the fast lap. So I think Ty Dillon will be right around that little area and could potentially get some fast laps, especially early on. And you've got Daniel Suarez starting in 23rd. He could be another one of those guys. Bad luck for him so far at Daytona. Four races and three wrecks. The one race he didn't wreck was the 400 2 years ago. Finished 17th. Nothing too exciting there. Did lead some... he's led some laps, but the thing with him is he's taking over Kurt Busch's car. His car is taken over by Martin Truex Jr., the 19 that used to belong to Carl Edwards, now is being driven by Truex. And it's kind of confusing seeing the 19, the 41, and the 1, all that kind of bumping around, fighting, and the duels and stuff. It's very confusing if you've been used to seeing the same guys in the same cars. Just another mix-up here, so you'll think that Daniel Suarez is Kurt Busch a lot if you played last year, but that's Suarez, and he's in a Stewart Haas Ford, which is really interesting. Was hoping that he would be more overlooked in things like the Clash and stuff, but you know, he's popular in them. Bad history here, maybe, you know, with him starting 23rd, he might start to get a little bit overlooked, but I think people will still play him. I do like him. Since it's really just been bad luck holding him back, his average running position is 14th, and I think he's in even a little better equipment right now, at least for this race here. So don't mind Suarez at all in the mid range there. David Reagan starting 24th, good ownership play for me. He's has a knack for finishing top 20 here, and seven of his last eight or eight of his last nine races, he's finished in the top 25 at least. He's starting right there at 24th, driving a Ford, 75-1 odds. It's a lot better for Reagan than at a usual track where he's just kind of, there in the not really the lower tier, not really the middle tier, just right there, right around the Ty Dillon sort of tier. Reagan, someone who gets really low owned over there on FanDuel, and he's good at completing laps and stuff. Has found some trouble here at Daytona, but I do believe he's won at Talladega, or maybe it was Daytona, several years back. But I don't think it was that legitimate of a victory, like a rain delay or some or rain cancellation or something like that. But you get it how you get it. I see Reagan being pretty low-owned just on both sides, and that's the appeal for playing him. Starting 24th, just not too bad, honestly. I like him there. Parker Kligerman, $4,500. You might remember from the second half of last year on NBC, he was usually a field reporter, just going around the infield, just hanging out with people, talking, interviewing him. But he is an avid part-time racer, and he raced pretty darn hard in the duels to get to where he's at, and end up qualifying 25th there, just way too high for him. He's like the minimum price on the board on DraftKings. And over there on FanDuel as well, part of that big bunch of guys in the minimum price range. But starting 25th, it's too high for my blood. You can't really justify playing that too much. I don't see too many scenarios outside of him just raw surviving. Where I'd play him. There's no need to go down in salary that much, honestly. Just starting a bit too high for how scrubby he is. Kyle Larson, he's starting back in 26th. usually that would be, you know, really eye-opening, seeing Kyle Larson at $7,800 starting back in 26. That would usually be, you know, really intriguing. He has struggled at restrictor plate races quite noticeably. He's been able to squeak out okay finishes at you know, these 500s, like 7th in 2016, 12th in 2017. You know, not terrible. So starting 26, you know, I could see it happening. Just in general, not the best plate race. It's probably his worst type of track. You definitely want to get him on like the steeper and kind of shorter tracks, or the 1.5s and stuff. You know, so he's just been really slow in practice too, like slow every single practice. I'm not really sure if there's anything, you know, up with the car or whatever, but yeah, he's starting far enough back to be not really a core play, but kind of getting there. Definitely one of the guys you're going to go to quite a bit. And I think just the general sentiment with Larson at these restrictor plate races, and him being a Chevy that's not a Hendrick, will kind of tamper his ownership a little bit, despite where he's starting at. And them just being there, just being a few more appetizing plays as you go further down. So Landon Castle starting 27th, he's not one of those plays. Now, he's finished better than 27th for 6 years in a row now, or 6 Daytona races in a row now, I think, but. He's driving that Jeffrey Earnhardt Zero car, and it's not good. Really off the pace in most of the practices. Put a bunch of laps up in that last practice and ended up 20th in average speed, 18th in fastest lap. But, you know, I'll have marginal exposure to him just because I think he's going to be really low-owned. And he's at least shown a little bit in the past to be able to put up like a, you know, a 13th and a 12th, but... It's not the highest upside play. Probably another guy that would just need to survive. And if you're going to do that, might as well just go to the very back, you know? So you've got, going on further, this is where it's going to start to get pretty chalky here. Eric Jones, who started last in the Clash and finished last because he loves to crash. His DNF rate at restrictor plate races is a 63%. He's crashed out of 5 of 8 races. And he likes to crash a lot, honestly. He's known for spinning out a time or two, but he was looking pretty fast alongside, you know, like Kyle Busch and in that one practice, even in the third practice, he had the fastest lap on the board, followed by Kyle Busch. So again, going to be those JGR stacks are going to be, you know, pretty important to make. You know, pretty easy to throw together. Eric Jones, Kyle Busch, and then like a Hamlin starting 10th. You could even go like Truex 11th. You know, that's. It's probably easy way to start a stack there. So Eric Jones, I think, you know, he won the last race of Daytona, the 400 last year, just kind of by sneaking up there. You know, I'd completely written him off just as being someone that crashes a lot. But at the 400, he's finished top 10 both times. It's the 500 that he's crashed from and a lot of other races. But he's starting back in 28th, kind of hard to ignore that. You're going to want some exposure to him, probably almost a core play, I'd say. Just starting far enough back to be in a really good spot there. Daniel Hemric starting 29th. He's, you know, 66-1 odds right now in that new number 8 Chevy for Richard Childress Racing. Interesting to see him give that number out after they've already given out the 3 to Dylan there. So both the Dales have had their numbers already just tossed back out there to new people. Now, Hemric was really good last year, especially at like 1.5 mile tracks in Xfinity. He raced like one race in Cup, and he shit the bed. But, you know, not bad in Xfinity. A really conservative and safe driver, someone who you would play on like a FanDuel where you just need to be safe and finish your laps and stuff. Of course, I'm not sure I was going to drive in the 8. You know, it's a new setup, and it's the last time we'll be seeing him in at least a classic restrictor place or plate race, at least for a while. So not really sure what to make of him, but I do think he's going to go under-owned, and with that in mind, I like him. If there's signs of him going or getting kind of popular in ownership, you know, if there's any new driver it's going to be Reddick starting there and almost last. But I think that'll make Hemric kind of go overlooked. And like I said earlier, the whole starting 29th instead of starting 30th thing will help him a bit. And there are just other plays starting a little bit further back, really just all around where he's at. The other people like more, like Eric Jones, even Goggin and Kyle Busch. So those are the next two guys I talk about here. Goggin starting 30th. He's been really, really good at Daytona in particular. It's the only thing he really races in the Cup Series. But he's finished top 12 in three of his last four races here. Pretty remarkable. Just always being able to just hang and survive. That's his trademark skill, I guess. He's a bit of a veteran in the like Xfinity series and stuff. Didn't see him race too much last year, but he's been around. He's definitely been around. He's even had former stints in the NASCAR Cup Series. So this is a guy you know can get it done at plate races. They're his best track type. That's kind of why he shows up to the 500. Starting 30th, yeah, he's going to be someone you want to put in your rotation. And you know, even with the two top 10s, or top 11s, I guess, with him coming into that race last year, he had two straight, you know, a 7th place and 11th place finish at Daytona coming in. He only pulled 9% ownership at last year's Daytona 500. Ended up getting involved in a wreck and finishing 28th, but still, starting 30th, just going to be a guy you want in your rotation for sure, and he'll come at a little lower ownership then. The next guy I'll talk about, Kyle Busch, who will probably be second highest in ownership, almost for sure, behind Keselowski, who we'll get to. But Kyle Busch, not really someone that's on the radar of people at restrictor plate races. He's usually he's the best short track driver. And then at 1.5 miles, he can bang on those too. You'll see him in contention pretty much everywhere. But restrictor plate races have not really been his forte recently. He's had a couple of good finishes back in 2016 when he had that amazing season. Or I guess it's the year after that, but still, Kyle Busch, not really, he's usually not someone that's on the radar. You know, you see him get priced down, especially over on FanDuel, sort of like Larson, you know, where sites are starting to get aware that hey, maybe that's not their wheelhouse, but starting 31st, it doesn't really matter anymore. He's Kyle Busch. He's certainly going to find his way up. His average running position, be it recent, long-term, at Daytona specifically or whatever, it's usually around 14th or so. Not really putting his car up there at the front, not someone you really think about when it comes to that. And really just Toyotas in general haven't had the best luck at Daytona really since Truex and Hamlin had that photo finish there a few years back. But again, starting 31st, I mean, he's a no-brainer play. You probably want to be overweight to the field, although I guess there's merit to fading him. But if you're really going to fade anyone, why wouldn't it be Keselowski? All right, we'll talk about these few guys here so we can get down to Keselowski. LaJoy, starting 32nd, he gets Matt DiBenedetto's car. But it's looked really bad. Last practice, he was 2.5 seconds off the pace, so that's really worrying. But we'll have to see with him. Probably worth getting some exposure to, because I expect him to be really, really, really low owned. And it is a step up in car for him. So I'll have a little bit of LaJoy. Matt Tift, another guy moving up from Xfinity in the 36 car there, that Ford. Starting 33rd, he's generally like a safe driver who would just chill in the top 10 in Xfinity Series, a la like a Jamie McMurray, where he would just be there. Towards the end of the season, he was actually dominating a pretty decent amount and really making his name known in those races. And yeah, he's someone I could definitely have some exposure to, and I think he could even break sub 10% ownership, maybe not on DraftKings, but on FanDuel, he'll be a guy nobody really plays. I like being overweight to the field on him for sure, down there at 33rd. And then Michael McDowell starting 34th. This is an excellent play here. He has three top 10 finishes in his last five, and five top 15 finishes in his last six Daytona races. And you throw on the seventh place finish from back in 2014, the ninth from 2013. The dude knows how to survive and finish here, and he's really, really good at the plate races. Definitely one of the drivers that benefits the most. So I think he's going to be quite chalky, maybe break 30% or more, starting back there in 34th. Yeah, most people that are playing DFS NASCAR know that McDowell is pretty darn good at these plate tracks, and starting back in 34th, that is a gift. So finally, we can talk about the elephant in the room here, the chalk to start the season off, Brad Keselowski. Now, he was even more chalk in the duel where he screwed everyone over and got a penalty and then got another penalty, and he was just down too far, ended up finishing right at the back of the field, so he gets to start 35th here. Very juicy for him, given that he's the odds-on favorite coming in. Winner back in 2016, and you know him and Logano have collectively won most of the restrictor plate races that we've had recently. A lot of success over there at Talladega, but he can bang here too. He's crashed out of his last four Daytona races, however, so definitely big merit to fading him. He's going to break 50% ownership and maybe 60%. I don't think we'll get there, but he's going to be the chalk. And you have to consider, potentially, if not fading, maybe going really underweight on him with it just being Daytona. You know how it is. I mean, it's happened to him the last several times he's tried here. Really, he's finished in the back half of the field in seven of his last eight Daytona races, mostly due to attrition. You know, four crashes in there, five crashes in there even, but still. Not a free play, not a lock by any means, but if you were to tell me that he isn't going to crash, and I can know that for sure, then he would be pretty much a free play, because if you get a full race out of Keselowski, he's going to find his way to the front. Almost no question about that. He's not going to be stuck at the back there. And he kind of turned it around in the final practice. Not the final practice, we're going to have that today, but the fourth practice there. Finally posted something that wasn't horrible. So Keselowski going to be the chalk and optimizer contest. He's going to be excruciatingly high owned. Because optimizers are going to want to jam him in no matter what. He's just going to project out super well. And that's just kind of how it is. So with Keselowski, make your personal stand. You can go really heavy to play it safe. Or you can try to fade if you've got the kahunas. You know, not really too much of a wrong way to attack him there. So the bottom guys here, this is where it gets a little juicy here. Ross Chastain. Who ended up being one of the few survivors of the truck race last night. He's starting there in 36th, way back in the field. You know, raced pretty much all last season in this 15. Not the best of trucks, or not the best of cars. He wasn't in the best of trucks either, but didn't end up mattering. But not in the best of cars. Would generally just float around like 28th or 29th last year, but here to restrictor plate, you do get a little more upside than that. He finished 21st in his only Daytona race last year. So he's someone you'll want to have some exposure to, definitely, both sides. And then the next few guys, kind of some fades for me. Cody Ware and BJ McLeod. These guys have really bad cars. Like, they're not great. They haven't been taking practice laps. McLeod especially, really, really, really piss poor times. Where we've only seen him make two practice laps, so these are going to be your avoids. You know, they could possibly survive if there's like a big one and they just kind of are still on the track. That's how they win, like by default, just for them starting back in 37th and 38th, but they're the worst bets you can make back here. They're not even going to be able to keep the draft. They're going to fall back quite a bit. So if it's a safer race, they are absolutely screwed. But you'll still want a little exposure to him, just because. If you're playing a lot of lineups, then, you know, maybe like 100 plus or whatever, then yeah, you need to get you a little bit of wear in McLeod just in case. But yeah, for the most part, you can kind of safely ignore them. They're in crappy cars. So the bottom two guys here before I end this podcast here. Xfinity qualifying has started, so we need to get this over with. But Tyler Reddick starting 39th. Now he won this race in Xfinity last year. I think people will know and remember that. He's in Ryan Newman's old 31 car, so it's not like he's in trash equipment or anything. He ended up having to race his way in here. Starting back in 39th, just as free as you could really get, he was on that he's on the junior motorsports team with guys like Sadler, guys like Allgaier last year, so he was in really, really good company, and you know, should be he's not the safest play, of course. I mean, it's his first real big NASCAR race here. It's just starting back in 39th, this is pretty much the probably the best play you can make, honestly, outside of Keselowski, because he's not going to get near the ownership of him. I could see him getting kind of popular, though. I don't know about breaking 30%, but on DraftKings especially, he could get quite popular. On FanDuel, he's minimum price, and he's the best play of the minimum price guys, for sure. And, you know, his car is better than last place, that is for darn sure. Should at least get to, like, in the 20s, mid-pack or so. And even has upside to get even more if he just survives. He's 100-1 in the odds, so 30-1 top three odds. Not the worst you could do. You know, it's better than guys like Tiff, LaJoy, Chastain. Even better than, like, Castle, Kligerman. Right up there with Reagan, almost. Buescher. So, yeah, love me some Reddick. Gonna be one of my top exposures for sure, if not my top exposure. And then last place, you've got a little guy called Casey Mears. You might remember him. He drove Ty Dillon's car for a very long time, always with the same sponsor. Because just like Paul Menard, his grandpa is the best sponsor ever. His grandpa, I think, he owns Geico or something. So he always drove the Geico car on that 13 car, and Ty Dillon still does it to this day. He's in number 27. I don't think that's it's definitely not the old Paul Menard car, the 27 for RCR. This is like a one-off car. He literally only had one car, so during the clash he had to go to the back. So the equipment might be a little sketchy. He was like top 20 in the practices and all, but yeah, he's starting last. And here's his thing here, if you go back to his last six Daytona races, five of them were in the top 12. Yes, that is correct. Five of his last six Daytona races, he's finished in the top 12. He had quite a knack for being that guy that starts in the back and finishes in front just by surviving. Just an unreal knack for that sort of thing. So starting dead last, you literally can't do much worse than that. Just another safe freebie play, and he's going to be much lower owned than Reddick. I'm not going to go in on Mears because the equipment, you know, is, you know, questionable. I'm not going to have like 70% or anything crazy, but I'm still going to have way more in the field. You're going to try to double or triple up the field, at least on Mears. You know, I was thinking about using him during like the duel and stuff, but I managed to maintain my my hype for Mr. Mears here. Save him for the race. But yeah, this is when you get to just go ahead and use him. He's starting last. It's Daytona. I mean, that's what you want. The guy starting last just do way better than the guy starting in the front. It's and they're going to be lower owned, too. It's just overall one of the best plays you can make. So that'll do it for Tacos Fast 40 for Daytona 500. Remember, lifetime 20% off discount at DFSArmy.com. Access to all of our tools, the Optimizer, Research Station, all that. DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO. And I will see you guys next week. At Atlanta. Have a good Daytona 500. You can hear my kids are up. Gonna go say hi to them. Well, one kid's up. The other's not born yet, but gonna go have fun with them real quick, watch Xfinity qualifying, and then get ready for that on the Domination Station. So I'll see you Army guys later. And for everyone else, again, consider using the link in the description. Promo code TACO on sign up. Get your lifetime 20% off. I'll see you guys next week in Atlanta.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.
Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.